Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to In Our Times with Cheryl Lubin, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And now I am with Robert Adut. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
It's my special guest for the show. And I feel a little bit, you look so nice, and yet I'm so intimidated by everything you represent. No, I'm just joking, because
we're here to remedy that.
Yeah, so we're here to remedy that, yeah. Because Robert is, this is Teacher Appreciation Week, or is it month?
It's week.
Both are, you know, every day should be that,
yeah.
But it means that in you I have the perfect guest for the occasion, right? Because you are founder of YayMath.org.
Yes.
You bring fun Michael Jackson tributes, wacky hats, overall fun, accessible delivery of math content. In fact, your videos from both the website, right, yaymath.org, and YouTube, basically, they are viewed essentially by almost 2 million minutes per month.
That's
sort of what you last clocked it as. So really, your website is actually like a free motherload of treasure available to all at any time, and I was looking through those and really looking at how you so seamlessly demystify math. You really kind of deconstruct it. So you're a math teacher in the San Fernando Valley. You grew up in Maryland, so you must be enjoying the sunnier climes out of here. How long have you been out in L.A.?
I've been here for about, I would say, 11 years now.
Oh, okay. So you can call yourself a Los Angelino, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, incredibly, yeah. And so you were a computer science major, right?
Yeah, that was
And you have a real passion for education. And you have most recently given TED Talks on conquering math anxiety and another one on ways to pursue a sort of purpose-driven life, right?
Indeed, yes.
And creating a personal sense of meaning in our lives. You are a nominee for National Life Group's National Teacher Life Changer of the Year Award. And the endorsements that I read, I mean, people literally all over the world, because of the digital access, I mean, your own classroom of kids, of course, but people worldwide, and because math itself kind of, you know, breaks those language barriers too. It's a common universal language, but people all over the world have really been helped tremendously by your work, and so I want to talk about that as well. And your programs were even used as a curricular resource in South Africa, so I want to hear the details about that. So we'll get to any and all of those things, including, of course, most critically, strategies for kind of dealing with student shutdown around math, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So welcome to the show. Congratulations on your success with everything. So I want to ask, in the TED Talk that I saw, you cited a Stanford study that reveals something really important about the origin of math anxiety. I mean, why so many people, myself included, feel this almost physical reaction when confronted with numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so absolutely. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for having me on. I've been really excited to come here and visit you. I braved the 101 traffic
on
a rainy Friday just so I can sit face-to-face across from you.
Oh, I'm honored.
That's what I wanted. And that's the perfect segue to your question. Many times people think when they're trying to learn math, it's about the numbers and it's about the concepts and formulas and things like
that.
I'm going to cap off Teacher Appreciation Week with the idea that if you want to learn math or if you want to teach math, you have to basically learn and teach to humans. That's really what it's about. We have to find a way to connect to students on a deep emotive level and on a performative level. And I know that that's something that's really big with your work. I've been reading up on you too.
Okay.
So we'll make that reciprocal.
Yes, exactly.
To your question, absolutely. Look, what happens is, according to the Stanford study that I cited in that TED Talk, is that as our brains evolved, we've had different functions and different needs, necessities. One of those necessities is survival. And so when we're dealing with a survival situation of fight or flight, the part of the brain that deals with that logical reasoning shuts down. It's not meant to be engaged. And so we have to first tap into what makes us human and calm and collected and emotional and what resonates with that on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And that is at the heart of what the AMath mission is. It's about connecting to the students as they are, as people, and finding that platform. And that is what resonates them and uplifts them, motivates them to break out of shutdown. And actually, they realize it's not so bad. And then the technical side comes layered on top of that.
So, when did you first? I know you discover. Did you discover a passion for teaching, or is that something that came when you had finished college? Because I know you said you had started your education or your post-secondary education thinking you would go into computers. As some
I did.
Work.
I went.
Okay.
I was working behind the desk. I was programming. I respected it. It just wasn't a passion of mine. And it definitely, in the grand scheme, it definitely helped me launch this platform, because I have that technical component as well. For example, with YouTube, I mean, YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world after Google. I mean, it's owned by Google anyway.
Yeah, and just celebrated its 10-year anniversary. Yeah.
So I consider us kindred spirits, because if you type in any major math topic in YouTube, Yay Math videos come tops above Khan Academy. As much as I respect what Khan is doing and they're changing the world, nothing can replace that human connective level, and it's one of a kind, and that's what I'm so proud of, listening to the list of accolades. And I know the only reason that it's happening is that we're able to successfully connect with humans, connect with kids and people, and make them laugh from anywhere in the world, from here to South Africa and beyond. And that's just, it blows my mind, and I'm honored to be a part of that.
Well, and it really, and I'm glad you mentioned, I mean, Khan Academy and others, there is something really unique about your videos that one would not find on other videos.
Resources, yeah.
Yeah, resources.
Yeah, the idea, like, for example, I'm so inspired and so motivated to talk about what makes inspired learning. I was able to recently get a book deal to talk about this. And the book is in production now. It's very exciting. And it talks about how to engage and inspire a person sitting in front of you on a one-on-one level. The book is called One-on-One 101.
I love it.
It's a mouthful, but it definitely resonates. It hits. It's the art of inspired and effective individualized instruction. The first thing to think about is the act of synchronicity, of connecting.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Connecting. I knew that, you know, we could have spoken on the phone, and I was looking forward to that. But nothing can replace the face-to-face.
Exactly.
I know that on a very intrinsic level.
Yeah.
So let's say you walk into a class, and you see the students, and it's Monday and everything. And right before, I've seen masters of education, masters of content, actually fall short of connecting on a one-on-one level, because they don't synchronize at the beginning. And they want to, but they just don't recognize the value of it. So what if a teacher walked into the class and said, okay, students, before we jump in, I just want to know, what was your high five moment of the weekend?
Okay.
I love that question.
Great question.
High five moment of the weekend. And then they actually sit and, wow, oh, this person wants to know what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling before they so wait, is this a gag? And then I actually want to know. And then if they can't think of one, maybe is that, wow, you haven't had a high five moment? Let's create some high five moments for you. And now the connections are beginning. And that's irreplaceable. It's incomparable.
Yeah.
How do you get to that moment? It's from authentic, time-driven, non-forced human connection. And I believe in that. I believe in that. So that's really what it's about.
It's powerful. So one can see what kind of drove you or what led you to education, because at its best, it's all about the connection, right?
It really is. Yeah. At its heart.
Yeah, at its heart.
At its heart and at its best. And that's the thing. I mean, we are teachers, you and I both. Joanne, too, on your previous call.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Such amazing work. We're all teachers. And you know, we give report cards. It's May. What if we got report cards? What if we got report cards? Let's say, America, please give us report cards and see, like, take a minute. How are we doing?
Yeah.
Right? And probably the truth is that it's a mixed bag.
I mean, in terms of specific teachers or education in general?
Good question.
Yeah.
I would say let that be in the eyes of the beholder.
Right.
Teachers, education, we're doing our best amidst the system.
Yeah.
But we could say, as far as our practice goes as teachers, how are we doing? And you know, I say, I want us to all do better. I want us to lift, raise the bar collectively with ways that you can instantly use tomorrow.
Yeah.
You can instantly do it. And And this is the, basically extra credit. Like, now we're asking for extra. Can I have extra credit, please? Can I do a project? This is our project. Teachers and students and parents of America, this is our project. And synchronicity is one of them.
Synchronicity, yeah. And the way in which you connect, the way in which you connect in many cases is through sort of the common the connection of music, right? Or costumes, or, I mean, things that people universally can connect with as well.
Absolutely.
So what was the origin of that idea? And of the idea to take, you know, your teaching, your profession of teaching, and turn it into something that is basically a mission. As I think I read in the material, something that has to do with like a business ideology of a social, doing social good, or spreading the message of making math accessible
to
so
many.
It's a
movement. It absolutely is a movement. There's nothing short of it. And I can only call it that because it's not about me. I'm along for the ride. I'm enjoying the show. And I'm just helping to usher it. And that's why I believe it to be a movement. The thing about music, I mean, music is what bonds us, and music is performative. Okay, Dr. Lubin, it's my turn to talk about my research of you.
Right.
In your book, Courting the Stage.
Oh my gosh, you read my book.
2008.
Yeah.
You talk about the performative nature of law.
Right.
As it appears in you know, movies and drama and plays and things
right.
like that. And that the performance of law, let's say in the courtroom, has actually
right.
affected discourse.
Yes.
It's changed the legal system. Law and Order, shows like that, To Kill a Mockingbird, A Time to Kill. I'm sure all of these productions have crept into the lexicon of practicing of law and discussion of law. And those, it's a beautiful harmony. I mean, you know, I still think of A Time to Kill, like, yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
like, that's part of
yeah, yeah.
that's part of now the language for anyone that's seen that movie. You,
right.
It resonates with you, and it's affected law. So then it hit me when I was reading into your book that Yay Math and its performative mm-hmm. nature is actually affecting education. It's changing mm-hmm. the dialogue of what education should be.
Yeah.
And that, like, I'm getting, it's radio. You can't see my goosebumps right now.
I can, and I can testify there. Like, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You see me sitting up
yes.
in the chair. My posture's incredible right now. So, yeah, and that's I think, what you've researched that in terms of the performative nature of law and how it's affected discourse. And now the performative nature of education is affecting discourse and affecting the pedagogy.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is just, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And I'm thrilled. Can I give you another component of inspired learning?
Oh, yes,
learning?
Yeah, please.
Absolutely.
Can't wait.
Another component of inspired learning, again, that's instantly implementable, and I want to have a discussion with you about
okay.
this, is the use of praise. I want to talk about praise for a second. By the way, great job.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was accepting that. That's okay.
Yeah. No, but that
the praise.
Would be, I, regardless of the fact that I think you're doing a great job, you know, throwing that as a motivational tool, I think,
right.
falls short.
That's
what I mean. You don't need my motivation by saying great job.
Right, right.
Maybe encouragement would be good if
yeah.
that's what we're talking about, or respect. I cited it's a University of Northern Iowa professor of education. Her name is Rita DeVries, and she talks about praise. She calls it sugar-coated control.
Oh,
it's really interesting to think about that. Like, when you use praise or withhold praise, it's sort of making it about you and your agenda, maybe.
It's used as I've noted that praise in the context of teaching or even other things, it can and often is used. You're right, as a sort of tool to lend a certain flavor put control or to lend a degree of control to the social situation.
It's well-intentioned.
Yeah. And well-intentioned,
it's well-intentioned, absolutely. You want so much. You want to lead your students to the promised land. You want to lead your children to the promised
right.
land. It happens in the home, too. And that's the thing, why it's well-intentioned. I want to give you a let's say, a situation.
Okay.
Imagine you have a young painter in school, elementary school, let's say, even middle school, high school. It could be across the board. And they're painting, and the teacher comes along and is noting and observing this child painting. So now what does the teacher say? The teacher can say, great job.
Right.
This is great, and be very well-intentioned. Or the teacher can say, I see you used a lot of blue over here with some green over there. So let's talk about the difference between those two. This is all at the heart of what gets students to to come out and to be them, their own intrinsically motivated selves.
Ah, because sort of blanket praise or short dismissive praise doesn't, it will not give them that degree of intrinsic.
We have to trust that it's in them already.
Oh my gosh.
In the students in the videos, do you think I'm bribing them with candy or grapes?
No, and what I did notice is that there's so much engagement and attention, and that is what really distinguishes your videos and makes them incredibly unique.
They want to do that. We have to trust that that's the human condition.
Yeah.
We have to believe it at the core level, and that teacher's roles is to set the table and then stand out of the way.
That is a really that's a beautiful idea, and I'm jotting that down because it's really a level of trust that can serve to kind of transcend any problems of the moment, and sort of that it's there in them, and
and it's the gateway to connection. So then that you talk about the blue, and then you can talk about why they chose blue.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about what they think about when they paint. You can think about, did they use blue in different pieces or things like that? And now we're getting into like the real magic. I think this is, we create a higher elevated energetic plane in which anything can set, you can praise at that point. Mm-hmm. You can close your mouth at that point. You can do all sorts of amazing human strategies to create that connection. And that's when the true learning and the true magic happens, the inspired learning.
You've got their brain percolating with more ideas that are genuinely coming from them.
It's their inner voice.
Yeah,
it's tapping into their inner voice. And then outer voice.
Yeah.
And then outer voice. And that's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge to me.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, and I was just remembering some of the ways that, I know you talked about the block to learning math, so specific strategies for unblocking. I mean, if you have students, well, I want to talk about that, but I was noticing, actually, I want to bring up this next thing because it's very powerful and it becomes a lifelong thing. In terms of math, I noticed, both as a kid but also when I became an English teacher, that adults tend to carry this bad habit with them. If they were not naturally good at math or whatever, they would classify themselves and label themselves as not a math person.
Right.
And often as an English teacher, I have deferred to the math teachers in my midst as, okay, you can handle, you know, I'm not a math person, meaning, but in a way, maybe that is a really self-defeating theme to maintain. I don't know.
I'm nodding by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So in other words, because I know that your program has helped not just kids of all ages and college students, but really as you say at one point, I mean, it's the 45-year-old mother who's going back to college and has to take that math class and needs something that is really accessible and will really break down any blocks to learning. So have you found that to be true, that people, whether its origin is in childhood or not, that they sort of, somewhere along the line, they have begun to classify themselves, to sort of resign and defeat it. That's just not my thing.
They have. Yeah. And I have one question to answer yours, okay?
Okay.
Cheryl.
I'm guilty as charged,
no,
by the way.
No, you've referred to yourself as the math black sheep in your family.
Yeah,
in
I am.
Previous shows.
Yeah.
Unlike your uncle, Dr. J. Lubin.
Dr. J. Lubin. And my father, by the way, who, you know, he's naturally good at math. So, yeah, they're all good.
I'm here. Let's do this.
Okay,
take out your paper.
No, I'm absolutely terrified right now. Yeah, you may not hear the terror in my voice, but I am terrified.
And here's why. Here's why, where I think that it went off the rails. Okay, and you can tell me.
Yeah.
I'm ready to listen.
Okay.
Whatever happened to process? Whatever happened to process? I think people are being robbed of their process to learn, to grow, to make mistakes in safety at every level, starting from children all the way up. And I have stories to back this. All right.
Yeah.
Let me give you a story. I was working with a student on a one-on-one level, and dad was very intrigued, and dad, her dad, of course,
right,
asked to join the session. And I said, yeah, only definitely as fly on the wall status, please. You know, we want to just give her a chance to figure it out. You know, she was struggling. So we're sitting there, and she I ask her a question. She makes a proposal for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that it was the wrong proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Mathematically wrong. Keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. Mathematically wrong. Mm-hmm. Not wrong process-wise. It's right process-wise. Okay, I'll get to why.
Okay.
And dad also knew, because he's an avid amateur mathematician himself, and he wanted to sort of see how the process of the teaching went. And he did a little, like one of those, right? Like, why are we going to do that? That leads to a dead end. And I actually, this is what I do. I'm so passionate about it. I turned to him with full respect and diplomacy. I said, she needs to be able to make the mistakes in safety. She needs to be able to do that and figure it out. And then he stepped back and he later acknowledged the moment and appreciated that feedback. But then after that, it was like she forgot. And every time she offered a proposal, we went through it together. I remained neutral, encouraging, mm-hmm. positive, remained neutral. And she got to the point where it didn't lead anywhere. And that's what learning is. That's what it is. Oh, so yeah. it's not five. The answer is not five.
Oh.
And this is why. Can you go back in time? I'll just make up a name.
Oh.
Sarah, can you go back in time 10 seconds and explain to the Sarah of 10 seconds ago what she didn't understand and what you do now? And I really mean that. And now her inner and outer voice is now coming together, surface.
And you know
what's so fascinating? I have a 15-month-old little baby girl.
Oh.
We're watching Sesame Street. And they did this just recently on Sesame Street. And I saw it and I leapt up and I was pacing like a panther. Like, they're doing what I'm doing. They're
uh-huh.
doing it. They're doing it. And what they did basically was, let's figure out how to make the correct solution for blowing bubbles, you know.
Oh.
So the ingredients are water and liquid soap and corn syrup. And then they asked the kids, what is the combination of water, corn syrup, and soap? And they said, well, let's put all the soap in and then some water. And they said, okay,
uh-huh.
let's do that. And then they poured it all in, and then they dipped the stick in, and
uh-huh.
oh, nothing's happening. This must mean something's wrong. And I'm like, yeah, you bet it's something's wrong, and that's great. They're trying to indoctrinate kids with the ability to make mistakes in safety.
Yeah.
And people have been robbed of that, and it's such an easy and understandable and sad repercussion. I'm not a math person.
Yeah, so somehow that block sort of begins for many people at the point where they were educated in the beginning. And you're right, allowing us to kind of reason our way through to a conclusion, even if it's not the mathematically correct one,
yes,
is really important.
Because the reasoning is what is correct.
And the pace at which, I mean, if people grew up with siblings, or even if they didn't, there might be, before they even get to school, there might be a difference in the way one sibling gets to a response, gets to a mathematical conclusion
yep.
before the other.
Yeah.
So there's that bit of sibling rivalry, and no, my sister's not an accountant, not at all. She is, by the way. She is a bookkeeper, really, but yeah. But it's fascinating that I would take what you just said, which is so brilliant, and apply it so readily and immediately to the teaching of humanities.
Absolutely,
right? I mean, there isn't anything.
It's
so if I'm lecturing, and I don't really lecture, but if I'm teaching Hamlet, and we're looking at, in other words, this has applicability to all disciplines, not just the humanities in the sense that we've defined them as educators. But you know, I might, you know, pose some questions, and there's really nothing wrong about what they might say next. I would then ask them more questions and more questions. It's sort of the art of the Socratic method and art of teaching in that way. So applying that to math in the same way, rather than simply dictating to, seems to be a wonderful way to begin and to continue that process. So.
It's really true, and it's a global human condition. It's a
yeah.
human facet, and that's what wins the loyalty of the student slowly over time on an organic level.
Yeah.
And then they will go to bat for you.
Now, what do you do with high school when I could see really small children sort of being perhaps relatively untainted by any preconceptions of themselves, but in high school, I've often encountered students who've, let's say, given up on reading. You know, I just don't have the ability. I can't do that. But my older brother can, or my mother can, or whoever. But how do you? What do you do when you see students who do come in with that defeatist, you know, sense that you know they don't mean to resist, but they do.
Absolutely, that's a great question. And the defeatist sense, you can actually say, is part of culture. That's part of their personal culture.
Yes.
So cultures, let's say, are learned. Our job is to reframe, recontextualize, and then recast the entire culture.
Reframe, recontextualize, and recast.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that was good. Made that on the spot. I got to jot it down.
Wow, you really made that. That's a gem. Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
That was good.
This is my life's work. So definitely, we're talking about what I love to do, and I want to help people. As cliche as it sounds. Because it's working, and I understand the value of doing that.
Yeah.
So cultures are learned. And so let's say in class, I recently had the chance to have a two-week subbing experience for a ninth-level two-year algebra class. So normally algebra is taught in one school year. This is taught in over 2 years, so they go at half the speed so they can really slow down and take it all in and not rush through it. And I ask a question, you know, neutral tone, always positive, but neutral. And they hesitate because they are afraid of being dubbed this thing. So then I would ask the class, so please tell Michael that we can make mistakes and not feel bad for it, right? And then they all go, right. And someone's like, no. And then we all laugh. And it's like now we have a – and then when I reference that, they know that that's the space that they're in. They know that that's the space they're in.
Yeah.
And it takes time. And just like anything, whatever happened to process, this is part of process. This is part of process. And it takes a Herculean effort. And it's the hardest thing to do, which means it's the right thing to do. That's the whole point. And I want to do I wouldn't call it an experiment because we're friends. I want to do a field exercise with you.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay. I'm scared, but okay.
Do you have your are you encouraged? Is your bravery up on a Friday?
Yes, I'm feeling brave. Okay. I'm feeling brave. Okay. I braved the rain as well, so yeah, I'm feeling brave.
I want your brother and uncle to listen to this.
Okay.
All right. So this will be fun. It's meant to be fun. Okay. So basically, I'm going to ask you to do a certain exercise for less than a minute. All it is, I want you to add numbers.
Okay.
Sequentially. So let's say if you're going to start with one, then add two to that, then add three to that, then add four to that, and so on.
Okay.
And then we'll stop whenever you want to stop.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say if we start at one, plus two is?
Three.
Okay. Plus three. Keep doing that yourself. Plus three is what?
Six.
Then what?
Oh, nine.
Well, no, then plus four from that.
Wait.
Then plus four.
Oh, I got it. There okay, go. So six plus four equals ten. Okay, very good. Got it. Sorry.
Then plus...
Oh, okay. 11.
Plus 4 from that was 10, and now plus 5 from that?
Wait. Somewhere along the line. Oops. Wait, somewhere along the line I...
This is good.
Yeah, this is... I'm exemplifying everything
this
that is
good.
Bad.
This is good. You're
And also I'm on the air, but that's okay.
I know, but that, you know, imagine how students feel in class.
Yeah. Yeah, because there is that... There is that performance, even though I don't have performance anxiety normally, I'm thinking, oh gosh, I'm not getting it right,
Yeah, and I can tell you, that, and here's what, immediately where my mind goes is, I don't think you understand the game.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily about ability, so we can focus on the game.
On the game,
And in a second or two, now you and I, it's almost as if we can... separate ourselves from being on microphones right now and talk about, okay, so do you understand the game? Let's start at the beginning. One plus two and is three, and then plus three, plus four, plus five, plus six. And then once you understand the game, it would be a different story.
No, I have an important question, if I may, it's because I was looking at several of your videos on algebra and kind of nodding and thinking, oh, okay, I'm starting to kind of get that. And it was quite exciting because there's something about algebra that it's so logic driven that once you kind of are patient with yourself and can grasp that, then it makes it accessible in some time. But... for geometry, and I've heard many math teachers say this, so I wanted to get your sense of this. Geometry seems to be quite a different, it sort of exists on a different conceptual plane. I think it calls on different intelligences to master. And so a lot of students, myself included, who finally were able to grasp algebra found geometry to be this sort of monstrously huge, you know, monolithic, big monster that we could never conquer because it calls on a talent that I do not have, but that all of you talented people have this ability to see shapes. And so everything from, you know, I joke with people and say I got straight A's in high school except for geometry. Wow. And I can't parallel park very well. And I think those two things are related. But I noticed that a lot of kids found geometry easy and a lot did not. So for those who don't, how do you help to overcome? Because it seems to, then you're getting into sort of variations of maybe learning differences if geometry isn't accessible in the same way that algebra is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the act of seeing it is really important. And no one can see something until they actually see it. I mean,
that's true.
That's important.
I have to remember that. Yeah. That's a really good one too.
There's a moment of zen.
Yeah.
And it's true. You know, the main difference between algebra and geometry, you hit it right, is one is logic driven, one is spatial orientation.
Right, right.
So you'll find me in class holding sheets of paper and calling them planes, two-dimensional spaces, and then driving a pencil through it and says, okay, so this is what a line can do in relation to a plane. You know, it can go through it.
Oh my gosh, I learned something. A little light bulb. You see the little light bulb on top of my head? That's great. Okay, so if you demonstrate it sort of performatively, then I get the concept.
Yeah.
Whereas just staring at shapes, I'm not going to grasp that.
Yeah, there's lots of tactics that are instantly deployable in class. Like, you know, you're familiar with the shape of a cylinder. It's basically a can of Coke. Is a cylinder.
Oh, well, see, now I get it.
So that's you could call it a can of Coke. So it creates the image. You're familiar with the image of a cone. You see them on the roads all the time.
Sure.
So did you know that there are three cones per cylinder?
Oh, okay.
It's interesting. So if you fill a cone up to the top with water and pour that into an equal size cylinder, you could do that once, twice, three times. Are we descending into a teaching lesson?
What's great, because this has actually made my week. Then I can go home and help.
We can't write ourselves off so quickly, because it's so easy to culturally do that. And I'm not going to let you do it anymore.
Yeah, thank you. And you're right. We do, as people, we do tend to label ourselves or really internalize our earliest experiences with math. And or with anything. Yeah, I agree with anything. I mean, I've certainly seen people do that with literature and so forth. And you're right. The whole goal is to make it accessible in a way that I honestly never thought math could be for me.
Yeah.
But to add in, you know, elements that make it a total experience, a sensory experience, a connective, you know, force between, you know, among the students is phenomenal. So tell us how people can access your work. I should say there's also a blog that is really fascinating, fun to read, and there are all kinds of wonderful resources. But I particularly love there's an index on your site.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's so many topics that your videos have covered, but you sort of make them rather self-contained or in other words,
as possible.
Right. So tell us how people can get to your site and anything else you might want to tell us about the site itself.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yaymath.org is and always will be an openly accessible public resource. I believe in that. I believe in that on a deep level. And that business model has worked. It's magnetized a lot of people who also get what we're about. I get so many messages from people around the world because they know that we're in the business of changing the world, and there's nothing short of that. And the videos basically are intended to do that one by one. So we have playlists. This is all this year. The site has been revamped to include Start Here and End There playlist ordering. So it's great for the homeschool movement as well. And there's a full index, which is you can just hit Command F on your keyboard and just find any topic that you want. Also on YouTube, it's all linked to YouTube as well.
Yeah, I saw those on YouTube, and it's great because it's right there, and you can watch it, and it's fantastic. It's really a well constructed, well designed site.
Yeah,
and
the model has worked. It's the proof is there, and so over the past 2 years, I sat back and I thought, what are the nuts and bolts behind why it works so well? And I just began writing them and writing them and writing them and writing them, and it's led to this basically how-to for a roadmap, a field guide for inspired instruction on a one-on-one level, how to get through to people, avoid shutdown, like you said, And I was so happy to talk about some of those ideas with you today.
This has been wonderful. Great. Yeah. And I have to say, it is a final thought. It's what's particularly great is, I mean, we know how central mathematics is to our professional lives in the future and all the job opportunities that will be created and are being created really do require knowledge of mathematics and mastery of it. But in a sense, even if one is, no matter what field of work or profession one is pursuing, that enhanced confidence, the enhanced confidence that one gains from mastering a skill will be a benefit.
Bravo.
No matter what a person does, no matter where they go to college or what they study, what profession they pursue, that is a tremendous benefit. So it's really, you're right, it's a movement and it's a fantastic and inspiring home page on your website too. It's phenomenal. So Robert Adut, thank you so very much
thank
for
you.
Being here today. You are such an inspiring guest, and I want you to come back. Will you come back
thank
sometime?
You. Thank okay. you for the invitation. I love it. It's been wonderful chatting with you, and I feel like we're on the same team. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely,
so much.
Absolutely.
Thank
and
you for having me.
My pleasure, and thank you for all you do. And this has been Cheryl Lubin for In Our Times. Everyone, have a great weekend.
You're listening to In Our Times with Cheryl Lubin, right here on LA Talk Radio.